biggest thing we can do right now is labor exchange, connecting the supply with the demand.
Welcome to MassMEP's Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. MassMEP believes that there's some element to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding inefficiencies, strengthening internal processes, or unlocking growth, that can extend the firm beyond its current limitations.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. I'm your host, Haley Steele, Marketing Coordinator with MassMEP. Today, we will be speaking about workforce development during the COVID-19 pandemic. Our workforce development encompasses a lot, especially in times such as now. So if you're a company that's looking to fill your COVID-19 essential jobs or a displaced worker looking for a new job amidst the COVID-19 chaos, we hope that this podcast and the resources we have with us today will answer those questions. Today, we have a special co-host. She was a previous guest and is the project development coordinator with MassMEP. We would like to welcome Lisa Oden.
Hey. Good to be here again, Haley. Always a lot of fun.
Good, good. Well, be prepared for today, Lisa, because we got a good one for you. So our guests for this podcast today are here, and they represent two of the 16 mass hire regions from across the state. I think that's right, Lisa, 16 regions?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. The two of them combined, they cover 80 of the surrounding communities in just their regions alone, which I think is a pretty large number. And their span of experience within the workforce development industry, it amasses over a lifetime. So I'd like to welcome Jeff Turgeon, who is currently the Executive Director of the Mass Hire Central Region Workforce Board, and Greg Bunn, the Executive Director for the Mass Hire Metro Southwest Workforce Board. So welcome, Jeff and Greg.
Hey, Haley. Thanks for having us. Hey, Lisa.
Hello. Thank you for having us today.
Awesome. Thank you both for joining us and taking time, obviously, out of your busy days. I'm sure both of you were pretty swamped these past couple of days, weeks, almost amounting into a month from where we stand so far, and being able to provide hopefully some insight into the workforce development. So I had said, I always ask our guests a question to kind of set the tone for our podcast. And I want to ask you, what have you noticed or you've confirmed about yourselves during this current pandemic of COVID-19 and this quarantine phase? How about you, Greg?
One thing I've noticed is I've always thought we could do a lot more with virtual services like this, moving everything to video conferences. And for what we do, it's always been a sort of a proof of concept. And now seeing it in action, I actually believe this can be the future of how we provide better services to job seekers and employers alike.
That's awesome. Jeff, how about for you?
Well, you know, I maybe a bit of a flip side of that. I had always thought I was pretty good with technology, and that you know, I was kind of up on a significant amount of the new stuff. But this has shown me that I am not as savvy as I thought. I kind of feel like my grandfather all of a sudden. You know what I mean? I'm yeah. I'm searching for the any key. You know, I'm. Been struggling a bit here and there with some of the different platforms and, you know, scheduling meetings or whatever, learning. So pretty interesting.
It's desperate times call for desperate measures, right? Need the escape key. Where's the escape key?
That's right.
Yeah. So Lisa, how about for you?
Well, you know, I live in the country, and so I'm sort of used to being pretty independent and that kind of thing. You know, I've got a little workout space in my home and an art studio, so I guess I'm kind of an isolationist, and I've been good with this. I don't have, like, some of those issues that other people are having. You know, yes, routines are a little bit different, but living out in the country, I'm used to shopping for groceries for 2 weeks at a time and that kind of thing. So I'm surprised that a lot of my own personal practices have not been impacted that much by this. Of course, the wearing of masks and gloves everywhere you go is certainly a new thing, and I'm not sure I want to get really fond of that.
Yeah, I agree. I guess we're, you know, and in the workforce side of things, we're all pretty fortunate that we can continue to do what we do every single day. I know on the Mass MEP side, we have actually been busier than yeah. we normally are. We are, I guess, on a regular basis. So we're pretty lucky. But if you guys could each maybe give us an idea, a brief background of the workforce boards and their relationship to the Mass Higher Career Centers, just to kind of give the listeners an insight as to how you guys work and what you do.
Sure, Haley, if you want, I can jump in first, Greg, and then you can take it from there. But boards in general oversee the public workforce system in our region. So for Central Mass, it's Worcester and 37 surrounding communities. And basically, we're tasked by the federal government with bringing the relevant workforce stakeholders together with an emphasis on employers to guide the resources that they're investing in workforce. So bringing together all the different federal workforce entities or related entities and their funding and kind of really helping figure out where is the wisest use of those investments. So, you know, bringing together educators, bringing together industry groups, other state agencies and partners, community organizations, and really kind of showing where are the needs and what should the priorities be for those dollars, and then helping set the policies around implementation. So that's kind of the role in a big picture of the boards.
Yeah, and just to tack on to what Jeff said, another role of the workforce board is to provide labor market information to our stakeholders as well. So we do a lot of research about industries and occupations that are in demand, industries and occupations that are in decline, and really pulling that information together and providing it to stakeholders. One of our major roles is to actually go out and procure a career center operator. So sometimes there's confusion of what does the board do versus what does a career center operator do. So through a competitive bid process, we select an operator to run and really deliver the on-the-ground workforce services in terms of working with job seekers to help them find new careers, access training, maybe if they're not job ready, going through workshops like resume writing workshops, how to use new technology like Zoom, like LinkedIn, find jobs. But at the same time, we work with employers too. And I really, really want to emphasize what Jeff said is the focus on employers. A lot of times people don't realize that. We look at businesses as our equal partner in this as well. So we help companies try to find talent. We help companies try to access grant funding that might be available to them, tax relief, you know, all of that. So really, again, so our role as a board is really to kind of set the operating stage and yeah. the career centers that we choose come in and actually carry out the operations on the ground. And we monitor that to make sure that day-to-day the services are being delivered.
Yeah, that's great. So, I mean, I think a lot of people, when they think of the word hire, you know, there's two pieces to that. There's the employer hire side, and there's the employee that wants to be hired. So it is definitely it's a dual word there. Could you guys, either Jeff or Greg or both of you, share with us some of the services that the career centers offer and how are they currently operating during, obviously, these COVID-19 days? So did you have to make a shift from physical, you know, locations versus now you're going online, and maybe give us some insight on how that's working for you?
Sure. Jeff, I'll start. One of the misconceptions about the career centers is that they were the unemployment offices. Yeah. And really there is, you know, theoretically there's no such thing as an unemployment office anymore. but now with the advent of the coronavirus, unemployment claims have been absolutely through the roof. So it's really now it's been sort of an all hands on deck situation where a lot of the staff at the Career Center are currently being retrained to help help individuals file those initial applications to sort of mitigate that flow. So a good chunk of our operations have moved over towards that But the other half of it, what we're really trying to focus on now is just that labor exchange piece where the companies right now who are deemed essential and do have hiring needs, they can post those positions with us. And what we can do is facilitate the job seekers who are getting laid off right now. Some job seekers who are losing losing work right now really are going to go back to their original company. So they're not they're not really looking for a new job to connect with another employer. So what we try to do is just do an initial assessment to figure out, are they, these job seekers, looking for immediate work, and then connect them with these employers. But literally everything that we're doing or had done in the past, one-on-one meetings, any sort of workshops that we do, we're in the stage now where we're converting all that content to be delivered online, one-on-one meetings through Zoom, all of that. So really that's the status quo of the Career Center operations right now.
Cool.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in too. You know, Greg covered a lot of the services that are kind of there for both sides of that, of the hiring coin, if you will, on the job seeker side, helping give job seekers information about what's out there, what jobs exist, what training might exist, or just kind of sorting through with them what their career plan would be. And then on the employer side, helping them seek out the talent that, that may be looking and trying to make that labor connection. Right.
Yeah.
And during the crisis and everything, it, you know, really has been a scramble a bit to move everything to remote access. As you can imagine, with a fairly large organization, you know, some staff are more comfortable with that than others. Equipment-wise, you had to get everything up and running. And then the other, you know, the other piece that, that boards are really kind of involved with is setting up job training programs and helping coordinate those kind of programs that help meet any kind of gaps that exist out there. And so also trying to take them, move them from in-person to online has been a challenge, as you can imagine.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've had to do the same thing. We've pivoted at Mass MEP and taking our trainings and what we have to offer and going virtual, putting them online, taking our information sessions or our lunch and learns, and now we're doing them as webinars. So we have that done the same steps as well. What are you seeing in terms of unemployment? Are there crucial services that you're able to provide to the unemployed population that can help them start or continue this job search?
Well, I think both Greg and I have worked with our career centers to kind of pivot from doing kind of the obviously large events and all that to doing what we can to identify those job seekers that are looking to get a new opportunity or looking to get stay active and working and getting them connected with those essential employers that are looking for workers, and a lot of them desperately looking for workers as they need to ramp up either production or you know, certainly like in healthcare, deliver services. And so we've had to kind of really kind of put that front and center. As Greg had mentioned, a lot of the job seekers though are looking to go back to their former employer once, so they're more furloughed than laid off. And so, you know, part of it is helping the folks that are under that want to keep working, get connected.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing so far in terms of looking at last month's unemployment numbers, more than half the folks who are losing their jobs only have high school diploma or less than high school in terms of their education level. And that's always sort of been a pattern. Those individuals in that group tend to file for claims more often. But so what we're trying to do is really use this opportunity to look at those individuals and figure out how we can take some of our federal training dollars and work with the training providers we have to get their training content up online. So during this downtime, these individuals are eligible for federal funding as dislocated workers. So what we're really trying to do is use this as an opportunity to take those individuals, like for instance, somebody who may have been laid off from a restaurant with only a high school diploma, use this as an opportunity for them to take advantage of some upskilling.
That's great. Lisa, how about you? You want to ask them some questions?
I think I'll jump in now. And I'm kind of curious about what the challenges your employees are discovering as they're working remotely with a client base that may not have full online tools available to them. I imagine some of your staff have some issues getting up to speed on the tools like Jeff was talking about earlier with himself, for example. But I was surprised several years ago in working with unemployed people to realize that not everybody had a computer at home, for example. Everybody was working, they had their smartphone and that was their thing, you know? So I'm just wondering how that impacts the population now.
Yeah, it's been a challenge, to be honest with you. I think a lot of the confusion comes from all the different platforms that are out there. So if are you using Zoom? Are you using WebEx? Are you using Microsoft Teams? They all do the same thing, but they're a little different in terms of how you log in. That's been confusing for folks. But a big challenge too is getting this technology across to our job seekers. So they may want to participate in a webinar, but like you said, they don't have a PC at home. They can't, maybe they can't afford internet access. Internet access these days is like $50, whether you're paying Verizon or Comcast or whoever. Yeah. But what we're trying to do is, you know, run through these different scenarios of how they can access some of our new content on their phone, on their Mac, on their Android device, and sort of field test this. And what we're really struggling with now is, what do we do with individuals who, you know, you really can't sit and file online on your phone without struggles. You can't sit through a webinar really effectively and participate. You can't write your resume on your phone. You know, so what do we do now with these individuals who used to be able to go into a library and use resources? How do we try to provide some of that extra assistance? But that's really, you know, been our big challenge so far.
Yeah, I agree with Greg on that. That's, you know, Lisa, as you know, a lot of the folks that come into the Career Center, many of them are seasoned professionals that are just, you know, they've been laid off or something's happened, their work's closed down or something. So now they're kind of forced into the job market again, which, you know, they've got pretty much, they're self-sufficient. They have, a good track record in work, and they've got, you know, they just need to beef up their resume and do some things, but they have all the technology they need. They have access to everything. And then you've got the other folks that, you know, Greg's talking about, that just really struggle with having access to, you know, the internet. And so, it's been it has been a challenge to reach those people effectively. We're doing what we can with our community partners. I'm sure Greg does the same thing there with working with different agencies and community organizations that have some connections there and can help with connecting folks, but it is a struggle.
Yeah, I can imagine. How about employers? I know that you also work with employers to find candidates that are a good match for them. So, like, what are you seeing right now? I imagine some employers have probably slammed the brakes on hiring, but I would guess that there are other sectors, probably the ones that are considered to be essential services, that maybe are hiring more because they've increased production and that kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit to that?
Yeah, sure. And I can, Greg, if you want, I'll jump in first. Certainly a lot of the hospitality sector has been decimated, a fair amount of the non-essential retail world. On the other hand, essential retail like grocery stores have really been struggling with keeping up with the staff demand, staff need. You do have a lot of staff that are no longer able to work, and so they've been struggling to get enough folks in. Distribution centers and warehousing and the delivery services are all. I mean, some of these, many of the organizations were struggling before the crisis hit with keeping a strong staff in place. I'm thinking of some of the long-term care facilities with their nursing, especially like a CNA staff or home health aides, direct care, you know, the residential homes and things. So, you know, those places have had to continue operations, and some, and like you had said, some of them are surging now and don't have the staff in place. And so they're pretty desperate to get good people in.
Yeah. And, you know, just, to follow up on that, there are employers out there who have needs, and most of them, they're adapting pretty well to this new virtual world. A lot of them are doing virtual interviews. They're really conducting all their typical onboarding process through online services, whether it's video conferencing, phone calls, whatnot. But folks are doing it the old fashioned way too. You know, a couple of our employers are actually doing interviews right in a parking lot. You'll drive up and then they'll have somebody come out and then they'll interview you with the, you know, with 6 feet away. And I don't know how it's going to work with the new face mask measures, but employers are adapting, you know, like Jeff said, Amazon is now in this space and they are desperate for warehouse workers, laborers, retail change a bit, CVS, Lowe's, Dollar General, you know, all these stores are deemed essential and we do need to go somewhere to get our toilet paper. So these folks are still, you know, still hiring, and we're working with them where we can support them in terms of, again, figuring out who is ready and available for work and trying to facilitate that labor exchange as quick as possible.
Can you just say a quick word about what maybe you've seen, since we're in the manufacturing realm at Mass MEP, maybe what you've seen on the manufacturing side of things?
Yeah, Lisa, as you know, a lot of manufacturers were struggling before the pandemic hit with finding and keeping good staff. And yep. So certainly for those manufacturers that have continued operations, that's only gotten worse from what we've seen. You know, there are a number of companies that are ramping up production, especially if they've converted over to you know, addressing some of the needs around, you know, protective equipment or ventilators or what have you. So yeah, they've been challenged. I think, as Greg had mentioned, some of them are really starting to implement new procedures around recruitment and, you know, some of the stuff that we used to do with them right before the pandemic really hit and Governor Baker had announced the stay-at-home measures. You know, we had a manufacturing focused career fair at the Career Center and so had 20 companies. Now, you know, it was originally planned for about 35 companies, and I'm sure a lot of the job seekers weren't able to make it in, but, you know, not having those opportunities to do joint recruitments like that, I think is part of the challenge here. But, you know, as Greg had mentioned, I think a lot of the manufacturers are really stepping up with implementing new ways of recruiting and bringing on talent. So they're doing what they can. But, you know, one thing I think should be mentioned too, and you know, with the need to provide people with increase and enhanced unemployment insurance, you know, it does, unfortunately, a downside of that for the employer world is it does keep a lot of people maybe on the bench that might otherwise be looking to stay active and working. So, you know, it's an unintended consequence. I don't know the answer to that, because on the human side, you know, you don't want to be forcing people to get out there, especially with social distancing, the need for that. So I don't know the answer there. It's not easy, but there is kind of a flip side to that care package that they had sent out, right? That it is maybe lessening the pool. Greg, I don't know if you've seen some of that yourself or.
Yeah, even you know, sometimes you have unintended consequences in situations like these. But on the employer side, we're getting reports of employers who are realizing some of the benefits that are available to individuals from unemployment, then on top of it from the CARES Act, and that's actually making them feel more comfortable about laying off people. So it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy where the more we try to help workers, the more these individuals are being laid off in this situation. And going back to your question about manufacturing too, you know, one sort of dynamic that we've seen over the years is the occupations that make up the manufacturing industry. You know, we're seeing more and more IT occupations fill that sort of matrix that makes up the occupation matrix that makes up manufacturing. We're seeing that even more now with recent job posts. There's a lot of programming and software engineering that can be done remotely, so it's really easy to do. So we're seeing you know, high demand for that as well.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's a great point. So kind of going through what we're going through, I guess now it's, what does the workforce board have their eye on for the future? You know, what will be issues or maybe the priorities for you guys as we start to come out of this? Like, how does this adjust where we're looking to the future and where you're headed?
Well, certainly, I really think this is a wake-up call for us to really look at what our technology infrastructure looks like across the workforce system in terms of being able to share information, do things consistently. That way, if a customer I work with in our region, you know, goes over to Worcester, you know, Jeff and their staff over there can pick up the ball and run. Better ways to keep track of who we have to in our sort of talent pool to match them better with job seekers. Ways we can centralize some of the administrative piece of workforce development. A lot of A lot of what we do is all under the umbrella of federal regulations, which has processes and a lot of administrative components to it, like going to a seminar, complying with certain requirements. If we can do some of those centrally, make it easier for job seekers to do, this is the opportunity to do that, to improve our system.
Okay.
Yeah, and just in terms of maybe some of the, when this crisis, the immediate crisis passes, it'll be interesting to see how industry responds and how the economy responds. You know, there are some that are predicting it'll be back to more or less business as usual.
Yeah.
And then there's others that are saying, you know what, this may be the death knell for a lot of bricks and mortar retail. You know, I do think that there'll be a pent up demand, and I'd be surprised if there wasn't a fairly robust boomwood, if you will, around manufacturing and around the need to restock shelves, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so I would think that as manufacturers convert back over to their normal operations, normal product production, I do think that there's going to be a fairly large demand there. It'll be interesting to see, though, if that demand, like on the consumer side, is met by bricks and mortar operations and the like, or if the trend will continue around moving to like online shopping and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just a little more point on that too. I think in terms of how manufacturing will be impacted, you know, over the weeks we keep seeing the need for facial masks and sanitizer and everything that is produced, we have to import from around the world. I think there's going to be a big shift to do things more domestically here in the States. So that could create a lot more manufacturing opportunities here in America.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what we're hoping.
Yeah, no, I think it makes sense that you know, if you look at this from a strategic standpoint nationally, right, that there probably should be a real emphasis on production, especially as it relates to not only the protective equipment, but also things like drug manufacturing and compounding. And so it'll be interesting to see if the life sciences and biotech manufacturing, if that is going to be further enhanced through strategic initiatives nationally to bring those back on shore. I think, you know, there was an interesting report I read a summary of somewhere online, so you know it must be accurate if it's online somewhere. I read a summary that basically said some general or some think tank had basically warned the defense secretary basically of, you know, we need to make sure that we're not dependent on other countries should a pandemic hit, or God forbid, some sort of weaponized situation. Like we need to be self-sufficient as a nation strategically and from a defense standpoint. And so that was just speaking towards military readiness and preparation. But as a society overall, right, we need to be able to be a bit more self-sufficient. So to Greg's point, I do think it'll be interesting to see if that gets onshore, if we see onshoring of manufacturing and life sciences for strategic purposes and mandates around that, that, you know, requirements around that, that would, you know, kind of bypass the normal supply demand kind of function, you know. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, definitely.
I, you know, obviously we would support that, so.
Yeah, definitely. It really makes you, changes your whole perspective when you get put into times like this, and your thoughts on how things, even when you break it down as basic as how things are done at home and, you know, how families react to situations. So it really does narrows my vision on what I need to do preparation wise from where I am. And then obviously going out into what we do every day, into manufacturing and where we work. And, you know, just like I said, as simple as we're very fortunate to be able to do and continue to do this every single day and go out and still help people, which is what you guys are doing as well. Be able to help them just continue to help themselves. And let's hope that there is a silver lining at the end of all of this, you know, when we get through with getting done with this whole pandemic, and hopefully it'll be less time than we expect, but who knows right now. Do you think, is there anything else that we've forgotten or that each of you maybe would like to add just personally? And
I'd like to put a plug out if I could. We're always looking for new board members to serve, and especially from the private sector. So if there are companies out there and you'd like to serve, generally we're looking for individuals who do have some decision-making authority in the company. But really, for what we do, it's shaped by employers, and we really want it to create an opportunity to give private employers a seat at a table to shape what we do. So I would recommend anybody in any region of the state who wants to serve on a workforce board do so, and we can be contacted. Our website is masshiremsw.com, and right down at the bottom there is a contact link with all our information.
Yeah. Okay. So you're masshiremsw.com.
That's correct.
Okay. Awesome. Jeff, how about you?
We're masshirecentral.com, all one word there. So folks can see us on online there. I will say that one thing that we didn't necessarily get into and could probably be a topic for a whole show unto itself, a whole podcast unto itself is the work the boards are doing. Both Greg and I appoint organizations for programs that work with young people. So yeah, both absolutely. Second Chance young youth programs, and then also our Connecting Activities, which is a state funded program to help bring career readiness work and activities to the schools. So yeah, primarily high schools, but even middle schools to some extent. So really making sure that word gets out to young people about career opportunities, including manufacturing, right? All too often, you know, families are young people are shying away from careers in manufacturing, which is only kind of creating that shortage of the next generation of workforce. So, you know, the boards have been working with the MEP and other organizations and education providers to try to let folks know about those careers that are out there. And one of the main ways we can do that is to get employers involved. So Greg had mentioned getting on boards and getting on to our workforce boards themselves, but also just connecting with us for helping opening your doors again after all this passes. But yeah, you know, doing student tours, doing offering internships, and I know young people under 18 being on the shop floor might not be available, but even just bringing them in to help. We've been working with Worcester Public Schools and the folks at the MEP around, can we do some capstone projects? So young people are basically working on a project away from the shop floor, but related to the operations of local manufacturers so that they can experience what it's all about and get to know companies. So that's a big effort overall. And like I said, I think that could be a topic for a future podcast itself, but certainly the boards do a lot to prepare young people in general for career work. And specifically, manufacturing has been identified as one of the areas that we want to keep a strong workforce.
Yeah, I know that's definitely, it's on our radar with Mass MEP and what we do, and it's bridging that generation gap that we seem to be having with manufacturing and what's happening to it. But it definitely is, it's definitely for a future podcast for us. We'll definitely be focusing on that and just making sure that we can reach out to the younger generation. And I would like to see what their reaction to this would be, and putting themselves now, if they were to transition into manufacturing, what they would do and how they see it and moving forward into the future. And if they may even have a completely different perspective we haven't even hit on or touched yet. So yeah, it's definitely a good, we will definitely retouch on that one and do a podcast on that again. So
great.
Well, I think we've definitely hit a lot of areas. I think we may, like we just said, we've opened some doors for some other podcasts we're probably going to have to get into. I loved having you guys here. Thanks, Lisa, for coming in and co-hosting with me today.
Absolutely.
You've been lucky enough. You've worked with you worked with Jeff, right?
Yes.
At one point, and working with Greg through some things as well. So this was my first experience working with them. So this was great. I enjoyed it. It was a fun podcast. Hopefully you guys all did the same. But thanks, honestly, really, thank you for taking your time to sit with us today and talk to us about this. It's really important for what's going on.
Well, thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, Harley. We really appreciate the chance to get out there and talk to you.
Yeah, sure. No, this is important. It's what's hitting home right now with everybody that's going on in this world. So let's look forward to maybe doing some non-COVID coronavirus podcasts in the future.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we're looking forward to do them. So thank you guys very much. And thanks everybody for listening in today for the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast. And again, you can always visit us online at massmep.org. Again, it's .org. And one more thing, I do have a question. You guys both have different email or different website addresses. However, they can get to you from the government site, correct? Like mass.gov?
Yeah, if you mass.gov workforce, if they Google that, they'll be able to see a listing of the 16 workforce boards in our career centers.
Awesome. So if they don't happen to be necessarily in one of your two regions, they can find the one that's closest to them in their region. All right, great. Well, thanks, guys. Thank you for joining us today. And let's look forward to doing another fun podcast in the future.
Thank you so much for listening to Mass MEP's Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. To listen to more of Mass MEP's podcasts or for more information on how Mass MEP, your resource for manufacturing greatness, can help you, please visit massmep.org.